The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Star Wars 7x7 episode 2913. The novel Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher comes out in just a few short days, and I am thrilled to bring you the first of a two-part interview with Adam Christopher. We will talk about how the project came about and so much more. Punch it! Hey Rebel Rouser, I'm Alan Voivod and this is Star Wars 7x7, your daily dose of Star Wars joy. And thank you so much for joining me for it. So Adam Christopher has written other Star Wars stories before, but this is his first novel set in the galaxy far, far away. It is Shadow of the Sith, which takes place in between the events of the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy and tells the story of Luke and Lando's search for Ochi of Bestoon and Rey's parents and so many other amazing things. I'm not going to get into spoiler territory, because the novel hasn't come out yet. It comes out on Tuesday. But there is a heck of a lot that we can still talk about without spoiling anything, and that's what we're going to do in this two-part interview. So today, we're going to start off by talking about how he found out that he was going to get to do this project. We're going to talk about writing Lando in a particularly difficult phase of his life, and so much more. So without further ado, let's get into the first half of my conversation with Adam Christopher, author of Shadow of the Sith.
Adam Christopher, welcome to Star Wars 7x7. How are you today?
Hi, good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm so glad to be able to talk with you, and especially in a quieter environment. We got to meet briefly at Star Wars Celebration with that one booth that was right nearby, the Penguin Random House booth with the incredible thumping music
going on.
Oh, the
DJ. Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah.
Yes, it was. Oh, my goodness. But we get a lot quieter conversation here, which is awesome, but hopefully no less exciting. And we're going to talk about Shadow of the Sith, which is your first novel to be published about the galaxy far, far away. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
And can you tell our listeners how the project came about?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to sound a bit anticlimactic, but I got an email. Well, because I'd done some short stories for the From a Certain Point of View anthologies, and I'd also done an IDW Star Wars Adventures comic backup.
Yes.
And I had worked on a Stranger Things novel, Darkness on the Edge of Town, which is actually the same editorial team as the Star Wars team at Del Rey. So I'd worked with them before, and I always wanted to do Star Wars in a more kind of full length thing than just the short stories. I was working on, well, I guess originally they invited me to do a Mandalorian novel, which I was working on, which we had to let go. But then the email was like, well, you know, bad news is we're going to let the Mandalorian go. On the other hand, there's another book which you might be interested in. And it was, yeah, with Shadow of the Sith, or it wasn't even that. It was just, well, you know, that story that Lando tells Rey in The Rise of Skywalker, where he and Luke went off searching for, Ochi of Bestoon, looking for a wayfinder. It's like, why don't you tell that story? And that was it.
That is awesome. And they just said, this is the story, like, here, go with it and tell it any way you want to and fill it in any way you want to for the most part.
Pretty much, yeah. Because my first thought was, my goodness, that's the other book. Like, seriously? I'm sad the Mandalorian had to go away, but then it's like, this is the other book? Okay, cool. And yeah, I think this is the thing with Star Wars. It's like they only want authors with experience, and especially because I'd actually worked with them before on Stranger Things. So they knew what I could do. And the kind of what I could produce for them. So they kind of had that confidence to just say, here's the idea, go for it.
Excellent. So, you know, I mean, not much is really known about that time period in the saga. And, you know, clearly you're a fan of the saga already. So, you know, what was it like for you to learn that you were going to get to write a key part of Luke's journey and that you'd also get to bring in other familiar faces from the sequel trilogy?
Yeah, I mean, really amazing. As a fan, I couldn't quite believe it. But then I also knew, you know, I suddenly had this big job to do. The opportunity to write two of the main saga characters, Luke and Lando, but not just any story. Like, this is an important kind of, I guess I call it like a, you know, tent pole moment in that middle period between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. So what a huge opportunity to tell something, to tell a story that we haven't seen before. Because, you know, there's been a couple of comics, there's a book, but we haven't seen much in this period. So it's going to be really interesting, I knew from the beginning, to kind of see what Luke was doing, what Lando was doing, and how I could tie the original trilogy characters to sequel trilogy characters, which again have been done a little bit, but nothing at this kind of level.
Right, right. And, you know, you mentioned Lando, and this novel is like really interesting because you get to present one of the most fun and beloved characters in the saga, but it's also at an incredibly difficult time in his life. So how did you approach writing for Lando and finding that balance between the sort of devil may care attitude and the heartbreak?
Yeah, I mean, Lando's been through so much. And this is the other exciting thing. It's like we can take original trilogy characters and actually do something with them. And I mean, by do something, I mean we can, or I can change them in some way, actually develop them, which is rare, because often mm-hmm. when you're doing sort of tie-in fiction, you're kind of doing backstories and you're slotting in between other existing things. But because this was this wide open period in the saga timeline, that was really cool. So Lando, yeah, I mean, one of my favorite characters. And although, you know, when we meet him in the book, you know, time has gone on. It's about 17 years or 16 years, I think, from the Battle of Endor. And it's 6 years since Lando lost his daughter. She was kidnapped, and he spent all that time searching for her. But I thought, what would that do to a person like Lando? So, yeah, we know Lando as the playboy, the gambler, the businessman, scoundrel sometimes, but like a man with a plan. You know, he's got a smile and a charm and a confidence, and he kind of knows what he's doing, and he's in control, essentially. That's what that kind of personality is like. So suddenly it's out of control. He's lost his daughter. He can't find her. What does that do to someone like that? So it was important that it's still the Lando that we love and that we recognize. You know, we meet him at first in the book. He's, you know, at a gambling table in a bar, not a cantina, like next level up from cantina, slightly more classy. because he's having not been able to find his daughter, having spent all this time, he's fallen back into old habits because, you know, the gaming table is where he has control. And it's very easy when you have such a kind of tip your life upside down trauma that he can go back to the old familiar habits. But he knows, because he's Lando and he's smart, he knows what's happening to him, and he knows that this is a distraction and that, you know, he's not cheating anyone except himself by losing himself in a situation like that. Which is why when we come to Shadow of the Sith and, you know, he overhears the plan about the kidnapping and the Sith, that really galvanizes him, because he's been searching for that fire within him to search for his daughter, to kind of redouble his efforts to get out there, go back into the galaxy, you know, make some progress. He's aware that he's drifted away from that path, but now with this new quest, he's like, okay, this is it. I can do something. I can get back out there. I can kind of reset myself, because, you know, this is Lando Calrissian. This is the man with the plan.
Right.
And he's the character that he's still the character we love from the original trilogy. He's different, he's older, and he's obviously affected by what's happened to him. But it's quite good, you know, Luke being kind of an old, like, they're not best friends, but they're kind of, they've got a 20-year relationship regardless of how far apart or close together they were. And I suspect they kind of bounced off each other periodically in sort of stories that we don't see. But yeah, I mean, he was real, Lando was a really cool character to write. And yeah, the strength I found in him, because he's Lando, and that sounds silly, he's Lando. But,
characters can you say that about? Yeah. I mean, maybe Han Solo too, and right. Leia also, I guess, but...
So yeah, so Lando is Lando, and that is how he deals with the situation. And I think he kind of comes out of it, hopefully, in a better place.
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to keep this conversation spoiler free because it is going to come out prior to the release of the novel, which is next week from when we're recording this. Yeah. So that's awesome too. It's really incredible. I want to turn you to The Rise of Skywalker, since we talked about, you know, not knowing a lot about that time period in between, you know, the movies of the sequel trilogy, and, you know, you getting to see The Rise of Skywalker and, you know, not knowing a lot of what happened during that time period yourself at that moment, I think, I mean, depending on when they offered this to you, but like, do you recall your initial reactions seeing The Rise of Skywalker, and in particular seeing Rey's parents ever so briefly on the screen?
Yeah, The Rise of Skywalker, I mean, you know, I'm a Star Wars fan. With every Star Wars movie, you go and see it 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 times. The two things that I still remember for that very first viewing was, firstly, the scene of Lando telling Rey about him and Luke going off on an adventure. Mm. Because my reaction to that was, what do you mean it's Lando and Luke? Like, that is an odd pairing for this kind of mission. So that was my first reaction to that.
That reaction? That's amazing.
I kind of, because I was with my wife, I kind of like looked sideways. It was all dark in the theater. I kind of looked sideways at her. I'm like, Luke and Lando, are you kidding me? Which, but not in a bad way, because I thought, well, that would be a really interesting story, because Luke and Lando are quite different people, and they're not, they're friends, but they're not best friends. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, that's a kind of interesting little wrinkle. And then you mentioned like the flashbacks of Rey's parents. You know, we see them for like 5 seconds. But again, I remember it very well because Jodie Comer, who plays Rey's mother, is like one of my favorite actresses.
She is amazing.
Yeah, she's in a series called Killing Eve, which amazingly, there's a GIF from Killing Eve of every kind of reaction you could think of. So on Twitter, I tend to troll people by posting GIFs from Killing Eve. But when I saw her on screen, it's like, oh my goodness, it's Jodie Comer. So I was kind of enthralled because, like, I love Jodie Comer, and there she is, and she's in Star Wars, and not just in Star Wars, she's Rey's mother. And again, it's this kind of classic Star Wars tradition of really important characters or really interesting characters only being on screen for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it goes right back to my favorite, when I was growing up as a child, my favorite scene ever was the bounty hunters in Empire Strikes Back, because amazing costumes and designs and creatures and droids, but you see them for 10 seconds. And then yes. That's it. You know, so when I was playing with the action figures, I think this is part of my kind of creativity, my kind of creative learning as I was growing up. It's like I would play with the bounty hunter action figures because I could create their stories in my head when I was playing, because we didn't see it on screen.
Ah.
So in a way, this is the same kind of thing. It's like we've got Dathan and Miramir, Rey's mother and father, that we see for 5 seconds in The Rise of Skywalker, and there's like 2 lines of dialogue. But that's kind of fascinating, because now, although they already exist technically, because we see them on screen, mm-hmm. I get to create the characters in the book, which is really kind of cool. Very cool.
Yeah, and beautifully drawn and well done, and also heartbreaking. And this is not a spoiler in the sense that we know that these characters die, and at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim, at one of the panels that you were at there, you discussed writing about the death of Rey's parents. So this is already out there. But you actually mentioned at Celebration that it was difficult for you to write about the death of Rey's parents. And I think you mentioned that you had multiple tries at it before you finally got to a place where you were, well, happy with it seems the wrong word, but where you were content with it, I guess. Can you talk a little bit more about the challenge of that for you?
Yeah, so that was the last scene that I wrote, and I think I kept it for the end. I mean, I tend to write my books in order because it's easy, but I kept that to the side because I knew I had to get this at some point, but I didn't really know what to do with it because, you know, and it's not a spoiler, but during the book, most of the point of view of Dathan and Miramir's scenes are told from Dathan's point of view. So it's like, well, what do I do? So I did, I think maybe four or five versions. I had Dathan's point of view, I had Miramir's point of view, I had Ochi's point of view, like which version of that would work. But I left it to the end because I knew it was going to be difficult. I mean, difficult emotionally, because it's like, it's, well, you know, I've just written this book with these characters and I have to kill them. I, you know, that's choice is not mine. But I thought that was interesting because, like, you know, as characters in the book, they don't know what's going to happen. Now we know what's going to happen because we've seen the movie, but they don't know that. So everything they're doing, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in our lives. They don't know what's going to happen. So they're really doing their best for Rey to save her and get away from this menace. And I, although it was obviously going to happen, that scene where they are killed by Ochi, I wanted to avoid this kind of inevitability because you think, well, what's the point of telling the story? Because we know they're going to die, so you know it's all boring. So I kind of tried to not play with the reader, but sort of maybe I did play with the reader, but like surprise the reader. You know, they talk, Dathan and Mirimir in the book, they talk about how, well, you know, they've got to make, all they've got to do is make one mistake and it's over. So they've got plans and schemes and adventures across the galaxy. And then I think when that moment comes, you know, when they meet the set, they meet the scene from Rise of Skywalker, it's sort of like, yeah, that's a mistake. They made a mistake, it's over. And it kind of, it surprises them, and I hope it surprises the reader because, you know, that kind of grinding inevitability of they're gonna die, they're gonna die, they're gonna die, would make for a bit of a dull sort of narrative. So I really wanted to avoid that. And I think, yeah, they, it's almost like when I did that scene, I was kind of surprised myself. It's like, oh, this is it, the end of the road.
That's great to be able to surprise yourself a little bit, to be able to find that for yourself as you're writing it.
Yeah, and it's the whole thing of like nobody, it's a, okay, it's a prequel novel, you could say. It's a prequel for everybody. Everything, like, well, this is Star Wars. Everything is a prequel to something. But yeah, like if they don't know what's going to happen, then I don't want the reader to know what's going to happen, even though we know the scenes from The Rise of Skywalker. Like that is not, those scenes are almost not the point. The point is the kind of the journey, which is, you know, easy to say afterwards, but you know.
But I think that's a really key point, and you know what you talk about with this, because this is also something that's been up for discussion with the Obi-Wan Kenobi series recently. The fact that we know that Obi-Wan and Anakin slash Vader all survive the events of this series, because of course it's A New Hope. And so, you know, if you approach it like that, then you kind of come from the mindset of, well, what's the point of this story? Like,
Yeah.
why are we bothering? We know that they're going to survive. But as you say, like, they don't know that they're going to survive. And so
Right.
it's about, you know, putting yourself in the character's place and experiencing it with them, rather than sitting outside of the canon and looking at the timeline and going, oh, we know they're going to survive. Who cares?
Yeah, and in fact, Obi-Wan Kenobi is a great example because, you know, that is the best, some of the best Kenobi and Leia and Vader stuff we've ever seen. And every episode when we opened up Disney Plus was a surprise. Like every episode is a surprise. But yeah, looking at it from the out, from the outside point of view, well, we know they're going to survive because there's a new hope, you know. But that is the perfect example of how you can tell an original, inspiring, interesting story. With characters set between something else.
All right, we're going to stop the conversation right there and pick up the rest of it on tomorrow's episode of the podcast. So for now, it just remains for me to say thank you so much for joining me for this episode, as always, and may the Force be with you wherever in the world you may be.
Star Wars 7 by 7 is is not endorsed or sponsored yet by Lucasfilm Limited, Disney, or 20th Century Fox, and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Star Wars, the Star Wars logo, all names and pictures of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. May the Force be with them. All original content is copyright 2021 by Star Wars 7x7. We hope you love it.